Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this special segment of Progressive News Network. We're here today to do an interview with the award-winning journalist, Ms. Eve Samples, of the Scripps Service. And without any further ado, I'd like to introduce her. Hello, Ms. Samples. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having me. How are you today?
Very good, thank you. And yourself?
Doing well. I'm in the middle of the newsroom, so forgive any background noise, please.
Oh, that's okay. I can forgive almost anything from a newsroom. Well, as long as they deliver the truth, and that's what's important. Well, thanks so much
for
joining us.
We aim for it.
always an important target, that's for sure. Well, the first thing I want to ask you is, I always ask my activist guests, what was it that made them step up to the plate when life is complicated enough, trying to make a living, trying to have a roof, maybe trying to have a family and friends? So let me ask you the same thing. What was it that led you to journalism?
Sure. And journalism and activism aren't necessarily the same thing, but since
right.
I'm a columnist and express my opinion in the paper, I guess there are some similarities in my case. But I have been in the business about 13 years. I spent a decade as a reporter first before I became a columnist, and I covered everything from local government to business. I did a little bit of cops reporting when I first got into the business. And when this opportunity came up a few years ago to do some local column writing for Scripps Treasure Coast newspapers, I welcomed it. It was a chance to choose what I wrote about, to interject my opinion a little more. And I have to admit, after a decade of being careful to keep my opinion out of the news, which, is we try our best, but everyone comes with their own perspective. But putting it in a bolder way felt a little bit unfamiliar. But kind of hit my stride now and honed in on some topics that interest me, and I'm really enjoying it.
Well, that's great. Did you write when you were young?
I grew up in a newspaper family. My father and mother actually worked for newspapers when I was growing up. My dad was a copy editor for a number of years. He used to copy edit my letters home from camp, actually. And always a lot of stories around the dinner table about what was going on in the news. And you would have thought that I'd steer away from the business, because I'll never forget the day when I was in grade school. My dad came home and had lost his job, because the Miami News, which was the afternoon paper at the time in Miami, had gone under.
Well.
It was a time when a lot of afternoon papers around the country were folding. Kind of a, foreshadowing the other troubles that would come to newspapers after I got into the business. It's been an interesting ride as we've tried to juggle the digital world with the print world.
It always struck me odd that the afternoon papers would be the first to go, because it seems that that would be where the day was summed up. And,
for me, I still read, if I get the Sunday New York Times, I'm still reading it in the evening, and it's kind of my time to relax. But I think the deadline pressure of getting the news out as quickly as possible is the reason that you saw the afternoon papers go first. And now, of course, we're in this purported 24-hour news cycle, although I think on the network and cable news channels, you see them repeat a lot of the same news over and over, so it's not necessarily fresh news.
Yeah. I think we'll really honestly be able to declare an end to the illusion of a 24/7 news cycle when those important government agencies stop releasing news at 6 o'clock on Friday afternoon.
Right. Oh, and that still happens inevitably. It's also a very popular time for filing controversial lawsuits. From 4:59, right before the courthouse closes.
You were in Miami, and your father was in Miami. Let's see, the news. What was it? Closed in the '80s, was it?
Yes, it was the '80s. I guess. Can't remember the exact year off the top of my head. It was the 80s, though, and he ended up getting lucky. He found a job at the Herald. The Herald hired a lot of old news expatriates, He was a copy editor at the Herald, where he retired. And the Herald has faced its struggles as well. I mean, it's part of the reason I'm working at a community newspaper now. Some of the larger and mid-size metropolitan dailies have faced some bigger challenges here on the Treasure Coast where we are. We still have a lot of more dedicated print readers. But of course, you know, things are always changing.
That's for sure. Well, you know, I always also ask my guests, what is it that you're working on now? I know you're a practicing journalist right now, and you have a range of beats. What stories are you following right now?
Sure. Something that I've written frequently about lately is state incentives for companies, taxpayer-funded incentives for businesses. And this is a pretty hot topic in Tallahassee right now. We're seeing a number of bills emerge on that front that would either require more transparency. And Enterprise Florida, the public-private partnership that funnels incentives to companies around the state, is facing increased scrutiny. And there's some talk about whether we even need Enterprise Florida anymore. You know, they call it a public-private partnership, but it's really still reliant on a lot more public money, our money, than private money. And taxpayer incentives are going to companies, in some cases, that have gone belly up. We saw that with Digital Domain here on the Treasure Coast, and they've become kind of the poster child for incentives gone bad.
Yeah, I watched that thing go sour. I've been in the online media business for quite some time. And when I saw them saying, oh, we're opening up studios here, and we're opening up studios there, and we're opening up studios here. And every time I heard that, I'd hear that the county money is involved here, the state money is involved there. It struck me right away that this was a company that was farming grants. And I was not surprised at all to see them go sour. I know what the economic life of a digital company is like, having run one of my own for 20 plus years. And when I see studios opening up in multiple places, in Florida especially, where the home of fraud, it struck me that I'd like to make sure that there's something that actually happens here besides the expectations of lots and lots and lots of well-paying jobs. So I wasn't really surprised. And now we're facing with the refuse that's left over.
It's been unfortunate. I mean, it was $135 million between state and local incentives for Digital Domain, and we're left with a big empty building in Port St. Lucie right now that the city's trying to rent out, and it's very custom made for this, you know, what was supposed to be a movie making studio. And last I heard, all they'd managed to do with it is rent it out on Sunday mornings to a local church. So you can imagine how much revenue that's bringing in.
I bet it's a real
moneymaker. It's not working. Yeah, and I can see a much better argument for taxpayer incentives for some of the biotech companies that have come in. I mean, if we're going to have incentives, I feel better about giving them to companies that are looking for a cure for AIDS, for example, as the Vaccine and Gene Therapy Institute is in Port St. Lucie. It was a tougher sell for a movie-making digital effects company. And also with the biotech companies, there was Jeb Bush, for better or worse, started it as an initiative to jumpstart a new industry for Florida, getting us away from construction and tourism. And, you know, the question is, once you've jumpstarted an industry like that, and I think you could argue that's been done in Florida, when do you back off? When do you stop pumping taxpayer money into it?
And when you say Rick Scott and money, there's always an interesting story to be told. I noticed recently we lost our lieutenant governor.
Mm-hmm.
Due to some interesting investments on the part of an internet gambling company. Is that part of your beat?
You know, I've just been watching that story. I haven't written on it, but I've been watching it with interest because Allied Veterans, which is the company at the heart of this case, was on the radar screen of one of my colleagues for years. His name's Joe Crankshaw. He's a veteran himself, and he did a project for us a few years ago revealing the percentage of money that actually gets to veterans from some of these veterans charities, and Allied Veterans was one of the worst. And of course, they got very defensive about his reporting at the time, but you know, lo and behold, a couple of years later, now this company has taken down a lieutenant governor as well. Although I don't know that Florida will be too much worse off without a lieutenant governor. I mean, it's a kind of a ribbon-cutting job, really.
Yeah, yeah. I also wanted to mention that some of the unique challenges that we face in Florida, we've got a very strong, one might even say, a Tea Party-oriented legislature who keeps trying to steer the state completely rightward, despite the fact that the voting populace doesn't seem to embrace its ideas so much. Are you involved in any stories in the legislature right now?
I keep track, or try to keep track, of what our local folks are doing. So probably the most powerful local lawmaker up in Tallahassee is Joe Negron. He's heading the Senate Appropriations Committee right now, has a huge role in the state budget, and he's a self-proclaimed libertarian, which means sometimes I really disagree with him, and sometimes every now and then we'll find an issue that we do agree on.
Are you thinking drones by any chance?
What's that?
Are you thinking drones by any chance?
Am I thinking drones? Yeah, I mean, I don't mind the stance he's taken on drones. I don't think anyone likes drones, and that was an interesting spectacle to watch in Washington over the past week. We saw some alliance across the aisle on that one, amazing, in Congress. So, sure, that's one that I think people of all stripes can get on board with, and Negron has taken a stance against drones. But also, he's done some stuff on the right to speak at meetings. Negron has that I agree with. It's more. I'm watching with interest his role in ending Medicaid as we know it in the state. I am a little nervous about the privatization of Medicaid in Florida, and also the reluctance to embrace the expansion of Medicaid that would come with the Affordable Care Act. So, you know, the question is, what alternative are they going to embrace? Because something needs to happen.
Well, I think we've gotten a clear sense of where our legislature would like to take us. If the Republican majority has their ways, that just as soon everything was voucherized and we sold off any of the state properties to the cronies. I mean, excuse me, important business interests. You know, I can't help but see parallels between so much of what happened when the Soviet Union collapsed and all the state resources there were sold off to a privileged few, and this drive to privatize the prisons, the prison health care, the schools. I mean, it's a really interesting paradigm that this legislation agenda coming from ALEC seems to have captured so much of the Republican agenda.
Yeah, I mean, ALEC, you mentioned ALEC, they also, yeah, their model legislation has been embraced a lot in Florida. And I, in some cases, you know, I'm a semi-moderate, I describe myself as. In some cases, I can see how
the
free... Yeah, I can see how the free market would play a beneficial role. Prisons is not one of them. I do not see why there should be a profit motive in holding people in prisons across our country. It's not worked in Texas. It's a major problem. I don't see why we're still talking about that in Florida.
Well, Ms. Samples, we're number one in prisons. We have more people incarcerated than anybody else in the world.
Yeah,
evidently,
major problem.
Well,
and actually, along those lines, something I'm starting to look into right now is a bill that Joe Negron filed related to speeding up the death penalty process in Florida. Speeding up the death penalty process also makes me a little nervous. I have a friend, close friend, who works on death penalty cases, and she has studied the fact that time is the more time you allow, the greater the chances of uncovering a false conviction.
Sure. And it seems that there's a rush also to speed up foreclosures. They're just not happening fast enough.
Yeah, that's another one I've got on my plate right now. And a lot of the settlement money with the big banks that were involved in the robo-calling is not making it to people who really want to stay in their homes. I just, whenever I met with a couple recently who I'm going to write about, who really wanted to stay in their home in Stewart and just could not work out a loan modification with their bank. Their bank was one of the ones that agreed, you know, was party to the settlement. So they're moving to North Carolina and doing a short sale. And I just don't see who benefits from that. Drags down property values for the neighbors. The bank doesn't even get more money out of it. And their credit is further damaged.
Well, that's okay. We can just bail them out again. Not a problem.
Yeah, I don't see this working. Actually, I think Pam Bondi, the state attorney general, is having a press conference on this issue this afternoon because she's getting increasing criticism about how the settlement has been executed.
I had some foreclosure experts on last week, people who are fighting in the courts for people who are under foreclosure threat. Mm-hmm. And they were telling me that even in cases where the documents were shown to be robo-signed and the collection agency has said, yes, these are not valid documents, the people sitting in as judges, because they're not actually sitting judges, they're people brought back from retirement, are still awarding it because they said, well, you know, I've got a standing order to sell this. It doesn't matter if the documents were bogus or not. It seems to undercut the whole legitimate legal process. If you don't have a clear title, how can you claim a property? But that seems to be no problem. And of course, if we're going to speed up the process, that certainly isn't going to allow for more time to correct these kind of problems. You're right.
Right.
It does seem odd. Who benefits from this? Qui bono, the old famous question. Who benefits from this? You know, Florida has so many interesting challenges from a population that is very economically skewed. We've got a small group of very well-to-do folks, especially in our area, and then you've got the rest of the people who are working for a living and obviously having a quite difficult time of it. Where is Florida going? Where is Florida being taken? What do you see? What guiding forces do you see taking Florida into the next decade?
One of the big ones is water supply. You know, we've seen Governor Scott embrace Everglades restoration, which is quite an about face compared with what he campaigned on when he was elected. But the reason for that is not that he, you know, suddenly wants to go, you know, embrace the natural beauty of the Everglades. He's starting to see it as a water supply issue for the population. So I think addressing that is a big factor. Now, of course, we've got some bills in the legislature now that threaten the ability for local governments to purchase land. And Everglades restoration, make no mistake, involves a lot of land buying. There's a bill out there right now that would force local governments to sell off an equal amount of land that they hold if they purchase new land. So I don't see how that benefits the process. And, you know, we're going to enter the era of some water wars in South Florida if we don't start getting proactive about it. So that's a very basic issue that needs to be addressed.
Well, I see that back in January 26th of this year, Governor Scott and Ms. Bondi agreed to extend leases to Big Sugar for another 30 years on 13,000 acres of state-owned land, which sort of flies in the face of Everglades restoration. But, you know, when Big Sugar knocks, our governor is very attentive to that ear, that's for sure. You know, it seems odd to me, and I think you raise a good point about water. When I relocated up to this part of the coast from further south, and like so many, and when I first arrived up here, I attended a town hall meeting in the Hobe Sound area, and I heard that there'd just been a development study, and they said, there's just no limit to what kind of growth we can have here in Martin County. We've got this and we've got that. And I said, let me ask you a question. Since we're not served by water or sewer here in the South County area, how many straws can you put in the ground where you're also putting septic tanks here on the coast? And they said, well, it's a simple answer to that, is that water resources wasn't included in our growth study. I said, how in God's name can you have an urban growth study or any kind of growth study without including water resources? Do you think they're going to be carrying this water in from Jeb's water reserves down in South America?
Mm-hmm.
They said, well, the simple answer is it just wasn't included in our study. So therefore, everything's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of myopic study is, I think, destined to do us a long-term harm.
Yeah. I don't know if you've been following the story of Lake Point Ranch in western Martin County. This is a mining operation that got approved under the old Martin County Commission and has since come under scrutiny by the new slow growth, for lack of a more nuanced term, commission. And the reason that now they're being scrutinized is because they are in discussions, very preliminary discussions, but discussions nonetheless, to basically clean some of the water from Lake Okeechobee on their property there and ferry it over to West Palm Beach. And you know, when you talk about sending water from your county to West Palm Beach, even if it is Lake Okeechobee water, which at certain times of the year we have a surplus of, it raises a lot of concerns. And the Lake Point Ranches people came in to talk to our editorial board the other day and defend these discussions, but you can see why it makes people nervous. And on top of that, Lake Point has sued the Martin County government for not upholding its end of the deal that they got approved for, and they sued Maggie Herchala, one of the iconic environmentalists from our county. I don't know that that does them any favors.
Well, you know, it's that new psychology where you slap the people you're looking for a favor from.
Yeah, and it is called a slap suit by the folks who disagree with it, a strategic lawsuit against public participation. And of course, the Lake Point folks deny that it's a slap suit. But Maggie Herchala is not a county commissioner anymore. She was speaking as a member of the public. So I will be interested to see how the courts respond to a lawsuit against her for speaking her mind, essentially.
And it may be an unfair question to ask you about politics, and if it is, just wave me off. But
okay.
I am curious what you hear at your listening post. You know, right now we've got a gubernatorial election coming up in a little while, and Charlie Crist, it seems, is being promoted by some to be a Democratic candidate this time around. Sorry about that.
No problem.
We'll interrupt.
Sounds like the newsroom.
Yeah, good afternoon. I'm sorry. I can't take this call right now. Thank you very much. Bye-bye. Okay. So let me restart that question. With Charlie Crist being touted as the new Democratic hope, do you think from what you hear that there's an interest in seeing him run as a Democratic candidate?
I think there's a lot of skepticism about Charlie Crist. You know, if you've ever met the man, and I have a couple times, he is incredibly charismatic, and you can see why people like him. But he's just he's been pretty pliable, I'd say. And I don't know that people on either side of the aisle really like that. You know, most folks want someone with a backbone who will stand up for what they believe in. So I don't have I do think Charlie Crist is very interested in running, from what I can tell, but I don't know that he's going to get widespread support. And it's been very interesting watching Governor Scott shuffle around on various positions. I mentioned Everglades restoration, but that's just one of them. More recently, he proposed across-the-board raises for teachers, which I like the idea of, but you have to wonder if he's just trying to curry favor in advance of the election. There have been a couple other issues like that. So he's really positioning himself to the center of his own party and I guess anticipating a challenge from someone like Crist. But I haven't heard about many other, a third option, but I suspect we will see something better arise before the gubernatorial election really heats up.
Oh, my goodness gracious me.
You need to get on the no-call list.
Yeah. Good morning, Richard. I'm sorry, I'm recording right now. Who is this? Somebody who really needed to talk to me. Obviously, let me disconnect the phone and turn off the ringer again. Okay. I think if we remove the batteries, that should work. Sorry about that. Okay.
No problem.
To return to my train of thought, if it still hasn't left the station, when we talked a little bit about this, the possible challenge of Charlie Crist for the Democrats, do you hear anything for a Republican challenger from Scott's right?
You know, there's rumblings, but I don't work in Tallahassee. I'm not dialed in to all those folks on a regular basis. I talked to our local lawmakers, and I really haven't pushed hard on getting some names out, but it would not surprise me. I think it's been very interesting to see Scott embrace the expansion of Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act, while his party has rejected it. So will they field a challenger on that issue alone? I don't know. Or has that been a bit of theater? So, because it does allow Scott to look like a moderate, knowing that it's not going to happen anyway. So we'll see what happens. I'm not on the inner circle of the Republican Party by any stretch. So I don't know what we'll see there. What's that?
I said, Scott, a real man of the people.
Yeah.
Which way is the wind blowing right now? You never know. He may embrace Obama and look for some transportation funds. You never know.
You never know. Yeah, that would not surprise me at this point.
If I were to ask you one question, how do you see this year evolving? We've got so many interesting challenges. The legislature, are they going to find some new way of trying to outlaw women's access to health care? Do you hear any sense of what the conclusions of this legislature is going to be, or are you focused more on, you know, sort of regional issues rather than Tallahassee-oriented issues?
I will say that I am somewhat encouraged by the leadership we have in Tallahassee in the Senate right now. Don Gates came in, talked to our editorial board recently, and while I'm not aligned with him on a lot of issues, he is embracing some of the important things off the bat, like ethics reform. I think he knows what a bad reputation
is. Can you say Jim Greer?
Right. I mean, it's been absurd. So just simple things like greater transparency on financial disclosure forms, a number of steps that should have been taken long ago. Gates is finally pushing those through, trying to make them happen. Weatherford, I think he's the House Speaker, and he's a younger guy, and he and Gates, it sounds like, have a good working relationship, and they say they're not competitive with each other. But I don't know. Weatherford said something earlier this week that raised a red flag for me when he was discussing his reluctance to expand Medicaid. He mentioned that, I guess, he lost a sibling when he was a child, and his family didn't have health insurance. He mentioned a safety net that helped them out, but didn't specifically name it. Well, I believe it was the Tampa Bay Times came back and found out it was, in fact, Medicaid. So
let's cut that now that I don't need it.
Yeah, that didn't make me feel too great. But Don Gates, from what I can tell, is a relative moderate within the Republican Party. He was actually raising some concerns about sequestration, which a lot of Republicans have just wanted to brush off and not raise any concerns about. Now, Gates is from an area where there's a military base, and he's going to see more direct impacts on his constituents. So anyway, that's a long way of saying that I think we'll see ethics reform come through. There's going to be some election reform. I'll be curious to see how that plays out. You know, here on the Treasure Coast, in St. Lucie County specifically, the Supervisor of Elections, Gertrude Walker, didn't certify her election results in time. And, of course, the whole Allen West, Patrick Murphy congressional race, it was a national story that played out as those results were contested. So we will see an effort to try to make Florida's ever challenged election system better. I'm not able to weigh in yet on the quality of what they're proposing because there's a lot of proposals out there.
One last question has to be asked before we leave the whole Republican agenda. Wasn't the timing of the closure of that trial just appropriate so that none of those Republican officials got to be dragged into court to talk about the funds for the Florida Republican Party?
With Greer, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's another one I've just been a spectator on. I haven't written on that, but certainly.
Talk about the nick of time, huh?
Greer took the fall in that case. I'm not educated enough about the inner workings of that trial to say more than that, but I don't think anyone wants to get too buddy-buddy with him.
Well, I wonder, was it a $5 million payoff, a $10 million payoff? I guess we'll find out eventually.
I'll leave that to you to speculate on.
That was one expensive sword to fall on, I guess. Well, Ms. Samples, thank you so very much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Is there a story you're looking forward to working on in the near future?
I've got a couple of little lighthearted fun things. You know, after writing about politics, especially during the legislative session, I like to mix it up a little. So I was over across the street at Blockbuster Video yesterday, which is closing, kind of the end of an era. Remember when we used to go to video stores and talk
sure.
to the people we were standing next to? It's kind of the, you can have a radio show from the comfort of your home now, right? So our society's just changing a lot in that regard. So I'm going to work on something along those lines for the weekend.
Well, thanks so much for joining me. I sure appreciate your coming, and I hope you'll come back again sometime.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
That was Ms. Eve Samples of Scripps, award-winning journalist who covers regional issues and state issues. Thanks so much for tuning in, and this is going to be repackaged in one of our regular shows. So thanks for joining us. These special assignments we don't typically promote, but thanks for tuning in. Rick Spezak, News Director, Progressive News Network. Thanks so much for being here.
There's a better world that's a-coming, tell you why. There's a better world that's a-coming, tell you why. We will feed them on the land, on the sea and in the sky. There's a better world that's a-coming, tell you why. There's a better world that's a-coming, don't you see? When we'll all be union and we'll all be free. There's a better world that's a-coming, don't you see?
And that's it for today's special segment. Thank you.